You're listening to Long Distance. I'm Paula Mardo. I first started working on this podcast in 2016 because I wanted to know more about a place in Los Angeles called Historic Filipino Town, or HiFi. It's a small neighborhood, maybe about a mile and a half long. Drive through its main thoroughfare, Temple Street, and you'll see some signs, a few Filipino restaurants, and, if you look closely, buildings for old Filipino organizations. But that's about it. So I started talking to people, recording interviews, listening. I learned that while HiFi is in a part of LA that is very quickly gentrifying, back in the day, around the 1940s and 1950s, it was home to a bustling community of Filipino Americans, like Carlene.
I'm Carlene Sabrino Bonavir. I grew up in Filipino Town, which is now historic, as am I. I'm a writer.
And Greg.
Greg Villanueva, architect, born in historic Filipino Town, Temple and Baudry, about half a dozen blocks from City Hall now.
Carlene and Greg have a lot of stories about growing up in Filipino Town, about being around the old manongs or the immigrant Filipino men who worked as seasonal farm workers or in service jobs at hotels and restaurants around the city. Carlene and Greg are also the cutest couple you'll ever meet. And when you ask them about their own meet cute, it goes something like this. Years ago, they went to a new art gallery in HiFi called Remy's on Temple. Carlene was part of a panel of writers talking about growing up in Filipino Town. Greg was sitting in the audience.
They introduced each other, started talking about themselves. And I remember this young lady who was saying that she was from Our Lady of Loreto Grammar School in Filipino Town.
Spoiler alert, that young lady was Carlene. And they found out they went to the same elementary school.
In the 40s, and what we found out later was that we were in the same class together in first grade. And I remember picking that up and saying that the most beautiful girl in that class was, help me, babe.
Rita Hernandez.
Rita Hernandez, that's
and
what I said.
I stood up to him. I said, she was not, I was the prettiest girl in that class.
That was a gotcha.
Cute, right? Carlene and Greg are both mixed race. Greg's dad was an Ilocano Manong. His mom was a mix of Spanish, Mexican, and Native, but she was very light-skinned, so she passed as white. They had to marry out of state because of anti-miscegenation laws in California, which made it illegal for non-white people and white people to get married.
I do remember eyes. As my mother and my dad and I would be walking down the street, I would watch the eyes, and the eyes would dart from my mother to my dad and back.
Carlene's mom was a mixed Filipina. The daughter of a Filipina and a Spaniard, she met Carlene's American dad in the Philippines in World War II.
My grandfather first went to the Philippines with the Spanish cavalry, and my father went to the Philippines with the American cavalry. And the story I like to tell is that those men did not stay on their horses.
Carlene's dad went back and forth from the U.S. to the Philippines several times, until finally he arranged for Carlene's mom to meet him in America. Carlene's mom, then pregnant with Carlene, and Carlene's sister, just a little kid, boarded a ship to the States in 1939. First, they got to Angel Island in San Francisco. Then they made their way to Los Angeles. They were supposed to meet with Carlene's father, but 2 weeks in the country, he unexpectedly died. 2 weeks after that, Carlene was born.
So here is my mother with a third grade education, a baby, and a five-year-old. She tried to stay with my Swedish aunt. My father is Swedish and French. My mother, of course, is Filipino and Spanish and Catholic. They're Lutheran Swedes. They couldn't be more different. So that didn't work out. So my auntie took my mother downtown LA, found the Filipino neighborhoods, Bunker Hill,
where a lot of Filipinos lived before moving to HiFi.
Dropped my mother and me and my sister off with $5 bill. And that's how we began our life here in America.
Growing up in 1940s and 1950s LA as mixed children of immigrants was different for both Carlene and Greg.
My mother did go to Dimasalong meetings, and we did go to Filipino parties. I can't say I grew up in the Filipino culture because I grew up in the LA culture. Downtown LA, everybody was from somewhere else.
My dad lived till he's 53. I never heard one word other than Philippines about anything concerning the Philippines. I think the closest thing I got to it might have been in seventh grade, sixth grade, when I wrote a story called 7,000 Islands. Before that, I think maybe I was in some bamboo clicking together dance where you wear those puffy white sleeves. But I have to say, I was totally ignorant. There was no connection.
When we talk about immigrant communities in America, we often talk about them in generations. First generation, second generation, and so forth. Japanese Americans have a particular way of defining this. Of course, there are specifics and exceptions to the rule, but basically, the first generation are those who were born in Japan, then moved to the U.S. as laborers starting in the late 1800s. They're called Issei. Their American-born children are the second generation, Nisei. Their American-born grandchildren are the third generation, Sansei. Research on immigrant groups, including Asian Americans, tends to define immigrant generations in this way, too. So Carlene's and Greg's Filipino parents are first-generation Filipino-Americans, the first to come to America from the Philippines as adults. And Carlene and Greg, the first to be born and raised in America, are second-generation Filipino-Americans. While their parents had to adjust to new ways of living and working in a new country, Carlene and Greg had to learn to grow up in a country where most people didn't look like them or their parents. And their parents didn't exactly have a blueprint for raising Filipino-American kids. They had to navigate between not just Filipino and American cultures, but a whole slew of cultures and social situations, thanks to their diverse backgrounds and environment in LA. In fact, Greg is actually considered part of the bridge generation, or the children of the Manongs. But that discussion is something we'll save for another episode. It all sounds so complicated. But looking back on it now, Carlene and Greg wouldn't have it any other way.
I hadn't realized how interesting it is, really, to look white and grow up in Filipino town. It was a strange way to grow up, and I didn't quite realize it. And sort of an amazing, I think, very, very lucky thing to grow up in a neighborhood where everyone's from somewhere else. And they all cook rice differently, and they all make coffee differently and get along and sometimes fight. But it was just such a rich neighborhood, so much going on, so much great food.
Immigrant experiences can't always be explained in neatly defined terms. There are always exceptions and changes. Like what happens when you're in between generations, not exactly first or second, but somewhere in the middle. What if you were born and or grew up partially in the Philippines, then moved to America, not as an adult, but as a child or a teenager? If you're in this category, you're part of something called the 1.5 generation. When I first learned about this in college, I felt like it explained my own experience, having grown up in the homeland, then moved to the U.S. at the age of 15. Though some academics might say true 1.5ers were between the ages of 6 through 12 when they first arrived in the new country. I don't necessarily agree with that age range. Based on my own experiences, I think 1.5ers are influenced by a lot of factors, where they live, where they came from, ethnic group, immigration status. Either way, there is a sense of feeling in between things. But I'll admit, because I was born in LA, grew up in Manila and Kuala Lumpur, then the Bay Area, my situation might be a little different. But like I said, there are exceptions. But this idea of being in between, of feeling neither from here nor there, is something I've thought a lot about for a while. On this episode, what happens when you're caught between what feels like two very different worlds, your homeland and your new home country, and you have to navigate jumping from one to the next at a very precarious time in your life? Where do you belong? Where is home? That's on this episode, 1.5.
Can I get one jolly spaghetti with one piece chicken joy?
Would you like a drink with that?
Yes, please. The pineapple juice. I'll get the peach mango pie. Yeah.
How many?
Just one.
Anything else?
That's it.
We're here.
This is my friend, Pia Ilagan Lingasan. We're in the city of Cerritos, a Southern California suburb, and we're getting lunch at Jollibee, the Filipino fast food chain with the big red bee mascot, known for sweet spaghetti, crunchy fried chicken, and other tasty Pinoy treats.
I will get the Jolly Spaghetti with one piece chicken joy. What is that drink?
With the pineapple.
With the pineapple. And I will also get a peach mango pie.
Without realizing it, I ordered the exact same thing. Lol. Anyway, Cerritos is a pretty Filipino neighborhood. Well, according to 2017 census figures, it's about 65% Asian, out of which about 15% is Filipino. Even the mayor is Filipino-American here, which probably explains why it has its own Jollibee. And this is where Pia has lived for almost half her life. But this isn't her first home.
Ooh, unboxing. How's it smell? It
smells like the home for me, right? It smells sweet. Everything spaghetti should not be, but it is.
Yeah, it didn't work.
I have to admit, I don't eat Jollibee often. In fact, growing up in the Philippines, I'll confess, I preferred McDonald's. But eating Jollibee now is sort of a nostalgic experience. Pia feels the same.
I never really had a lot of Jollibee growing up. But when I came here and I started eating it more, I'm like, man, this is home. I'm like, really? Is it really? Because I didn't really have a lot of this.
I've known Pia a long time, but this is the first time we've seen each other in real life in over 15 years. We both used to live in the Philippines, and we went to a small, private, all-girls Catholic school called Poveda Learning Center. I know, it's changed its name since, and I think it's a college now. But back then, it was a small private school named after the Spanish priest turned martyr turned saint that founded it. And Poveda, like other private institutions in the Philippines, went from kindergarten through 12th grade. We talk about the good old days in Pia's house in nearby Buena Park.
What's the school like?
Very small, maybe too small if you were, worried about your business being broadcasted.
We also had to wear these uniforms with a sort of
gingham pattern.
That's
what they said. And honeysuckle. It's not yellow, it's not gold, it's honeysuckle.
It's intense.
Dressing up today, I was like, am I wearing cool colors right now?
It's a little bit more orange, but yes, the goldish and the black. You are
I felt it.
Yep.
I felt it.
You felt it.
Pia and I weren't best friends or anything, but we had friends in the same circles, and because our school was so small, everyone knew everyone.
What else about it? It was pretty wealthy.
Poveda isn't as famous, perhaps, as some of the other bigger elite schools of the Philippines, but it was private. Some of our classmates were children of celebrities, politicians, that kind of thing. But I did not come from a rich family. Neither did Pia. Our parents just worked hard and wanted to send us to one of the best schools in Manila. For Pia, that came with some guidelines from her parents.
My parents were grounded enough in saying that the minute you ask me to take you to Disneyland every year because your classmates went to Disneyland with their families, or the minute that you ask me for a designer bag or designer purse because your classmates have it, we're pulling you out. Like, you're there to learn, you're there to go to school, and you're there to get a better college. So I think that was always ingrained in my mind.
Another thing she had in mind was that someday she and her family of four, mom, dad, Pia, and her younger sister, would move to the United States. It was always part of the plan.
So I think my parents have always been kind of deciding that they wanted to move anyways. We just didn't know when. My dad actually was here first. He found a job, and then his job was able to petition him here and to petition the whole family.
Her dad got a job in construction. About a year later, when Pia was 16 years old, he returned to Manila. And he told the family they'd be moving later that year, in November. He'd go back to the U.S. to get everything ready, a place to live, schools for Pia and her sister. Then Pia would meet him, and mom and sister would follow shortly after that. When November came, Pia packed her bags and got ready to leave.
Moving never really hit until I had my friends over for lunch, like our last lunch. And it would be the last time we would all hang out complete. And I think my best friend, Trish, got in the car and she looked back from the rearview mirror at me. That's when I like cried. I was like, okay, everyone's gone. And Trish was the last person. And I was like, oh, this is real. Like 2 weeks later, you know, I wouldn't see her every day anymore. And I was 16, you know, that was like such a weird time in my life. You know, you're discovering things and you want to be there with people that you kind of grew up with. And us being from Poveda, from the school that we're from, you know, we've known each other since we were toddlers, right? And so, I don't know, it was kind of a surreal feeling. And then next thing I know, I was just packing up my stuff. And then I was on the plane.
It was the early aughts, and Pia left her best friends at 16, in the middle of her junior year, to move to another country. Not easy at all. I know this because I went through it a year before Pia did, at 15. And it was one of the toughest times of my life. Dramatic, I know, but I was 15 years old and pretty dramatic. Like, really, I did theater. But back to Pia. Her family arrived in the fall of 2004 in Cerritos, a Southern California city near where she lives today, where we just had lunch at Jollibee, where there is a pretty established Filipino-American community, and where Pia already had some family. So it seemed like things were going to be okay.
We were living in a room in my aunt's house. So all four of us who came from a two-bedroom condo with like our own rooms and bathrooms, now we're like in one bedroom and we were just adjusting to everything. And then about a month or two later, we did move to our own apartment. And that's when it really sunk in because we were spending our first Christmas, you know, here. I remember that was a really hard Christmas for us.
Christmas like in the Philippines? What's your tradition?
We would go to midnight mass and then we'd go home and then we'd have Noche Buena and then we'd open gifts and then no one would sleep until like 4 or 5 in the morning. But this time it was Christmas Eve in Norco, which is really far from here. It's up in the hills. And my cousins had a huge, beautiful, beautiful home and they had like a big, big, big tree. And it was so great because they had all kids our age. And so it was so nice. But these are cousins that we didn't really grow up with. You know, everyone's having a great time and everyone's trying to like have us join them. And I'm, you know, my sister and I are super friendly kids anyway, so we had no problem mixing in with them. But then reality sunk, I guess, that we weren't home. And we've never spent Christmas away from home, like our own house, basically, you know, not, you know, we're always at a grandparent's house or our own home or whatever. It just wasn't what we were used to. And I guess it overwhelmed us a bit. So my sister and I ended up running to the car. And then we were just crying in the car. I remember that. And then one of our cousins actually chased us, and she was like, "Are you okay?" And she's checking. My voice is shaking, just remembering it. She was like checking on us, and she was like, "Don't worry, you know, this is your first Christmas. You'll get used to it, blah, blah, blah." And we were like, "I don't think so. I think I want to go home." And so my mom followed shortly after. And then the four of us just went home, and then we just spent Christmas Eve with reheated chicken from Stater Brothers and just rice, and that was like Noche Buena that night for us. And we were like, "Man, this isn't the great Christmas. What is this?" But I think going home was probably a good idea to get my sister and I kind of comfortable again. We just needed that first Christmas to just, okay, let's adjust to this new life. Like, we're not home anymore. So we moved here. So yeah, so my sister was in fourth, fifth grade. I was a junior in high school. And then...
Can I pause you real quick?
Yeah.
I noticed you're getting a little emotional.
Yeah.
Why?
I guess I kind of remember how it felt. I do get pretty emotional when I talk about, you know, little pockets of those moments when we were new here. Because I'm super friendly. I make friends pretty easily, no matter where I go. But I think... the move in the middle of, like, my teen years was just, you know, I don't want my parents to feel like, oh, we made such a bad decision moving, like, just, you know, at 16 without even thinking. But I think it was just difficult in that I was getting into this community because Cerritos is pretty tight-knit also. Like, you have a lot of people who grew up there, who have kids there. And so, you know, a lot of them are really tight-knit too. So finding a spot took a little bit longer than normal for me. I think that's just why sometimes I get choked up thinking about it, because I'm like, oh, that was a really bad part. That was like a bad part of my teenage years.
I know what Pia is talking about. Like I said earlier, I went through the same exact thing. Moving to a new country, it's such a weird age. If you haven't already, listen to the very first story in the very first episode of this podcast, where I talk about my, quote, long distance story. When I moved from Manila to the Northern California suburb of San Ramon at the age of 15. If you're going to listen to this, make sure to pause and come back right here when you're done. Basically, I totally get how Pia felt. Being around that age, in a new city, in a new country, is overwhelming. What do you do? How do you fit in and find your place? How do you find home? How did Pia do it? That's after the break. Hey, Patrick.
Yo.
Do you like the podcast Long Distance?
Yeah.
Then consider helping the show.
I like it. How?
There are lots of ways to help. You can share long distance with friends or family in real life or on social media.
Oh, damn.
Don't forget to use the hashtag longdistanceradio or tag @longdistanceradio so we can like and share.
Hashtag will do.
You can also rate and review the show on Apple Podcasts. That helps a lot.
Done did. 5 stars.
And if you're feeling extra generous, consider donating to support the production of the show. You can find more information on this at longdistanceradio.com/donate.
www.alreadydidthat.com.
Donations will cover things like podcast platform fees, website fees, transportation, and other production needs. If you have questions or are interested in becoming a show sponsor, hit me up at hello@longdistanceradio.com. Now back to the show. Ew, is this your car?
Welcome to my sexy van.
Yes, van life.
I swore before that I wouldn't drive a van, that I would drive an SUV, and then we tried to put the car seat in my sedan, and it didn't fit, so I took my parents' van, and I haven't returned it since.
Oh, this was your parents?
Yeah. Let's see. Maybe...
driving through Cerritos. Well, Buena Park first, and then
I'll show you where like our first apartment was.
Oh, cool.
That we lived. We'll go that way. Oh wait, so this is the first apartment we ever lived in. We lived in a one-bedroom apartment here. That's where we spent our first Christmas.
Really?
Yeah, that was the apartment.
That's where you ate your rotisserie chicken?
Yes, that is where we ate our rotisserie
chicken. On the fold-up table?
On the fold-up table. Wow. Yeah, so that was the first one. But yeah, so this is Cerritos now. You see the trees? They changed.
When I listen to Pia tell her story, I can't help but think of my own experiences. She was 16, in the middle of her junior year. I was 15, starting sophomore year. When she moved to America, Pia was excited. Open to new opportunities, this new life, new country, had for her and her family. I was too. She was also very unfamiliar with this new world, new culture. And according to her, Cerritos, the suburb that she moved to, was a very tight-knit community that she didn't quite know how to break into. I felt the same about San Ramon, where I moved to. But unlike me, Pia had a plan. Well, a piece of advice, really.
So before I moved here, our guidance counselor actually at Poveda was talking to me. So she said that I have a really loud personality and I'm a really, you know, outgoing person. And my strong personality may or may not adjust well to, you know, Americans.
The guidance counselor basically said, keep quiet. Keep your head down so you can fit in. Assimilate. Pia kept that advice in the back of her head.
I was like, okay, strong personality, strong personality.
She didn't really have time for any other plan. She arrived in the country on a Thursday, started school 3 days later that Monday.
It was the middle of the semester, and so everyone had their seats, everyone had like their friends, everyone knew where to go for lunch, and number one, you know, in Poveda, we were wearing uniforms. I didn't know what to wear every day. I didn't know who to sit with for lunch because it wasn't like a lunchroom. It was just, you know, you buy your food and then you eat like out of the quads. So I didn't have anyone to eat with at the quads.
Where did you go your first day?
My first day? I don't know. I think I ended up just like walking around because I didn't know where to go. And I didn't know what to do either. Like, they're not very good with like orienting you about where to go like your first day. You just kind of have to find your groove.
It wasn't the best first day experience, but it also wasn't the worst. Something unexpected happened in her first period class.
A girl in my class, because I guess the teacher had introduced me that I came from the Philippines, she turns around and she's like, "Nagtatagalog ka pa?"
Nagtatagalog ka pa? Do you still speak Tagalog? A girl asked her, in her first class on her very first day.
I grew up there. I was there like last week. So I was like, oh yeah.
The girl turns out was Filipino, moved here at a much younger age, but she still spoke Tagalog. And when she said that, Pia decided to change plans. Her guidance counselor's advice to be quiet, be aware of her strong personality, went out the door. And Pia decided to be herself.
When she made friends with me, it almost kind of triggered me to just be myself again. The ringing in my head about having a strong personality slowly like kind of faded away as I made more friends and as I, you know, started to find my way around school. Oh, and she had offered to have lunch with me, but I didn't find her during lunchtime.
When I listened to Pia tell this story, I realize this is where our experiences start to differ. We may have come from the same school in the Philippines, similar upbringing, but the communities we first moved to in America were vastly different. Census figures in the year 2000 in San Ramon, where I moved to just 3 years later, showed the city was predominantly white, like 80%. Asians made up a significant group, about 17%. But within that, just 2.5% were Filipino. You could tell because at church, there was only a handful of Filipino families. Now, also in the year 2000, in Cerritos, just 4 years before Pia arrived, it was predominantly Asian, about 60% actually. And within that, about 12% was Filipino, hence the Jollibee in town. While San Aron has diversified since, like there is a boba shop there now, and the Filipinos at church have multiplied, it was very, very different when my family first arrived. If someone had asked me if I spoke Tagalog on my first day at school, that would have been mind-blowing, honestly. Neighborhoods aside, Pia and I have very different personalities. As you can probably tell by now, Pia is very friendly and outgoing. I am, in my opinion, less so. And at 15, I was very shy and insecure. My first day, all the kids looked the same, all white, and I could not feel more lost. Her first day, a Filipino girl befriended her, made her feel a little more at home. This is not to say things were super easy for Pia. That first Christmas in America was definitely a hard one for her family. Lunch in the quads was a challenge her first day, but she was able to find her way around school in a way that I don't think I did. Listening to Pia talk about how she made lots of friends.
I think I had made more friends than some of my friends who have been there since middle school.
Or how she wasn't fazed by the ignorant things people said to her.
He's like, so did you like live in a tree?
And how her school, Gar High School, was very, very multicultural.
It was mostly Latino still. Few whites, Portuguese and Indian, Filipinos, and a lot of the Asian culture is super diverse. I think the good thing about going to Gar was that
I just could not relate to any of that at all. In my high school, I felt alone, and I had a hard time making friends. Things were so bad, I remember crying in a closet, telling my parents I wanted to go home, to the Philippines. I remember my first birthday in America, just a couple months after we had moved. I spent it walking around the park of my apartment complex where I lived with my sister in a sad SpongeBob SquarePants balloon. A few years ago, I talked to a therapist about all this, and I realized 15-year-old me was actually pretty depressed. I did eventually make friends and ended up fine, but I still felt separate, lost, in between. And it wasn't until college that I learned that this was all part of being in the 1.5 generation. Within the Asian American demographic, 1.5 generation has been used to describe Asians who immigrated to the United States as children or adolescents. They have some similarities to the first generation who immigrated as adults, like a strong connection to the homeland and being able to speak the language. But their developmental years are spent in the United States, so their experience is similar to that of the second generation, born and raised here. I first learned about the 1.5 generation by reading about Vietnamese refugees who had moved to the U.S. as teenagers. And while my experience is nowhere near theirs, I found similarities in the ways in which I felt in between the country I came from and the country where I was going to live the rest of my life.
Living as a minority, I suppose, inevitably puts you in that position where you don't really feel at home, even though you've acquired all the ways in which you can have a meaningful life.
That's Julius Bautista, an associate professor at the Center for Southeast Asian Studies at Kyoto University. Sorry for the poor audio quality. I recorded our Skype call using a phone app because it was originally just for notes. But what he was saying struck me so much, I wanted to include it here. Julius is a 1.5er himself, born in the Philippines and grew up in the Philippines, then Australia. He has lived in Singapore and is currently based in Japan. When I talk to Julius, he says being a 1.5er isn't just about identity. It's also really about belonging.
I think a lot of 1.5 generation people, such as myself, strictly speaking, remember things about my childhood, which was in the Philippines. But that doesn't necessarily equate to a sense of belonging to the Philippines. Whenever I go back to the Philippines, of course I can speak the language. Of course I can circulate quite well. But there is always this gap that suggests that I don't quite belong. So identity, identifying, and belonging, I think there's a very, very significant difference there that 1.5 generation people, in my opinion, it's a privilege to inhabit. A lot of people would find it dislocating and disorienting, but I think my experience of it has been actually empowering.
A 1999 study in Amerasia Journal on Korean-American 1.5ers showed the 1.5 generation is such a common experience for Korean-Americans. They even have a word for it, iljeom or se. I hope I didn't ruin that. Thanks to the folks who helped me with translations. I'll link to the term in the study on the website. According to the study, Korean-American 1.5ers can speak Korean and are familiar with Korean culture, but they're also steeped in American culture. In fact, many in the study were used to flying back and forth from Korea to the States. They are physically in between the two cultures, and they're often sought after as bridge builders between the Korean-American community and American society, and between the first and second generation Korean-Americans. In all my years thinking about being a 1.5er, I never thought about it as empowering. I never thought about being a bridge builder. I asked Pia if she's ever heard of this stuff. Have you ever heard of the term 1.5 generation?
No, I have not.
After explaining it a little bit, I ask her if she feels a part of this in-between generational experience.
I don't know if I would, by definition, fall into it because I was already 16, right? So I guess like some kids in the Philippines are already going to college at 16. I don't know. But I think it also has a lot to do with my personality. I always just was open to making friends everywhere.
Personality has a lot to do with it, sure. But so do social and cultural factors like upbringing and learning the language. Pia literally embodied the 1.5 generation at school. Though her first friends were Latino, she eventually found friends in the Filipino community because she could literally talk to all of them.
In the same quad, you'd have the Filipinos who grew up in the Philippines and then the Filipinos who grew up here. They could see each other and they could probably talk to each other if they talk loudly enough.
Did they hang out?
They did not hang out. And so I was kind of in the middle because then I would assimilate to, you know, Filipino Americans who grew up here. And I would still be able to talk Tagalog to like the Filipinos who grew up in the Philippines. So I was always in the middle. So I guess 1.5 generation, maybe, but also a lot of it had to do with my own personality. So, because a lot of my friends here are just that, like they grew up there in the Philippines and they had like a life there, but they went to middle school here and they still didn't adjust to, you know, everyone else up to now.
Pia found her way in high school. She made friends with everyone, did theater, joined a bunch of student groups, except for the Filipino club. That was more her sister's thing. She also got involved at church. She sang in a church choir in the Philippines and did the same thing in Cerritos. She met a lot of her good friends there. After high school, she worked while going to community college before transferring to Cal State Fullerton, where she got a degree in accounting. In a class, she met her future husband, who, like her, was born in the Philippines before moving to the U.S. as a child. They're married now and own a home in Buena Park, right next to Cerritos, where Pia grew up. And they have one cute little baby boy. Pia is an internal audit supervisor for a company in Long Beach. She drives a minivan, and before work, she drops her son off with her parents, who live like 5 minutes away, but she gets to work from home a lot too, so that's pretty sweet. In other words, Pia is living the all-American dream. She's come a long way from eating reheated Stater Brothers chicken on her first Christmas in America.
I'm 30 now. I'm turning 31 in a couple of weeks. So in another year, I would be here for exactly half my life because I moved here at 16. But somehow it still feels like, you know, the Philippines is still home. So I still like going home and I still like being in the Philippines sometimes.
When was the last time?
I went to the Philippines in 2015 okay. when I picked up my wedding dress.
Like a true 1.5er, Pia finds connections between her homeland and her present home country. She navigates both spaces pretty effortlessly. As a bridge builder, she finds home in the Philippines through her friends and relatives who are still there, and through her memories and the nostalgia she has for the Philippines she left behind. She also finds home in America, in her community of friends and family in Cerritos, and in her actual house, a place she can truly call her home.
Being that we own a house in Southern California at 30, as immigrants too, you know, I guess that's a pretty cool little achievement we've kind of accomplished. You know, we're both educated. My husband and I both are college graduates. I'm in grad school now, so it's like we've done what we could with what we have here, and I think we've done okay.
Listening to Pia and her experience makes me understand my own in a way. I don't necessarily feel at home in the Philippines, but there are aspects that I miss or appreciate about it. I don't own a home or even feel at home in the city I first moved to, but I do feel at home when I'm with my family and in Los Angeles, where I've basically built a community of my own. As Filipino-American 1.5ers, Pia and I are the same, but different. Our individual experiences are layered and complex, influenced by a whole host of things. And these experiences, in turn, shape the way we grew up and the way we live our lives today. Maybe it's a personality thing. Maybe it's a 1.5 thing. Whatever it is, we figured it out in our own way.
What would you tell your 16-year-old self with what you know now?
Okay. I would tell my 16-year-old self everything was going to be okay. Moving at 16 was definitely, you know, I was kind of just going with the flow. Looking back, that's why I sometimes get choked up. You know, I can kind of reflect on how difficult that might have been. And sometimes my mom, you know, to this day, she's still like, remember when you were eating dinner out of a whatever? And now, you know, we have like a really expensive dining table. It's so weird to look back now, but I would tell my 16-year-old self to just go with it. You'll be scared about a lot of things growing up, but by the time you're 30, you'll be fine. And choose accounting. Marketing is not for you. You'll find a job, don't worry. The recession will be over soon, and you'll find your way. So, I don't know. I got emotional there. Good job, Paula. So, yeah.
After Pia and I finish up our chat, I pack my mic, headphones, and recorder into my little black backpack. I try not to trip over the baby gate as I make my way to the bathroom. Then I give Pia a hug. We tell each other we should hang out again sometime. We say, stay in touch, goodbye. Then I walk out the door of her lovely suburban home. The sun's out, the street is still. A school bus drives by. As I hop into my car and get on the freeway. Then, in slow afternoon traffic, I drive home. This episode was written, mixed, and produced by me, Paula Mardo. Co-producer is Patrick Epino. Cover art is by Selena Calma, with title design by me. Theme song is by Sea Light and the Prisms. Music in this episode is by Blue Dot Sessions and D. Yankee. Special thanks to Katie Park, Sue Oh, and Leslie Shim for helping me with my Korean pronunciation. I hope I didn't butcher it. More info on the 1.5 generation is on the website. I want to share scenes from the next episode with you. But first, there is so much going on with long distance. I'm so excited to be making more stories this season and next, so please, stay updated. Make sure you're subscribed to the show on your favorite podcast app. If you need recommendations, check out longdistanceradio.com/subscribe. Watch our new web series, Long Distance TV. It's a behind-the-scenes look at the making of this podcast.
I know there was a bamboo clicking together dance where you wear those puffy white sleeves.
A new episode is coming soon, so check it out on the website. And don't forget to follow Long Distance on the socials, Instagram, Facebook, and there's also a Facebook group, Long Distance Radio Club. Now, on the next episode of Long Distance.
So here I am with open arms and hoping you see what your love means to me. Open arms.
Thank you.
Beautiful.
That was awesome. That's next time on Long Distance. Thanks for listening.
Yeah, I will just practicing that just a special song to my sister. I just want my sister not just to be happy, but this is a memorable wedding.